From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Oh, Redwood City, California.
Hayward?
Near Richmond? Richmond District, kind of?
I'm from Concord.
Martinez.
Hercules?
I'm from Marina, California.
SF State, wherever that is.
Coming up, we'll find out why gas prices in California are so high.
California uses a different sort of gasoline than the rest of the country. It's a different formulation. It's a more expensive formulation to produce. It's also a cleaner burning formulation.
Then we'll talk with the doctor who studied the link between health problems and the foreclosure crisis.
It wasn't really something that we normally think about as doctors. We think about things like the food you eat and how much you exercise.
And we'll hear your thoughts on how the economy is affecting how kids get to school.
It's outrageous. I spend so much time and money driving my kids around town.
Get on the bus. We're going places today on Cross Currents. If you want to know the price of gas around the United States, there's a map online at gasbuddy.com that breaks it down for you. The states with the cheapest gas are green, and the states with the most expensive are red. It's probably the only map where California is one of the reddest states in the country. A report released by AAA earlier this week reported that prices in the state have actually dropped in the last month by an average of about 10 cents a gallon, but they're still an amber hue, significantly higher than most of the rest of the country. So why do Californians always suffer most? KALW's transportation reporter Julie Kane has the story.
I got the gasoline blues.
I moved to California from Kansas about 15 years ago. The move made me realize what a big country we live in and how different daily life can be from state to state. But we do have some things in common. Whenever I talk to friends and family in other parts of the country, there are three things we can always talk about: the weather, how much it costs to buy a house, and the price of gas.
Gas ain't for free.
It's an easy point of comparison. This past week, we asked folks all around the country to record the price they paid for a gallon of regular gas.
Big Timber, Montana, $3.62.
Lawrence, Kansas, $3.65.
Golden, Colorado, $3.79 a gallon of regular unleaded.
I'm in Nashville, Tennessee, and gas is $3.79.
Holiday gas station, Minneapolis, Minnesota, $3.89. Hot dogs, $2 for $2.50.
I'm in Boston, Massachusetts, and a regular tank of gas is $3.95.
I'm in Brooklyn, New York, at a Hess station on 4th Avenue and Sackett Street, and the price of a gallon of gas here is $4.19.
But in California, we're kind of jaded. Our gas prices, on average, are usually higher than in other parts of the country. We can pay as much as a dollar more per gallon than people do just across the border in Oregon or Nevada.
San Francisco, California, regular gasoline is $4.70.
Basically, gas prices rise when crude oil prices rise, and right now, crude oil is expensive. Severin Borenstein co-directs the Energy Institute at UC Berkeley. Borenstein says that no matter where you live, the bulk of profits from gasoline go to the same people.
Oil producers. That's the main driver. The reason we have $4 gasoline now and we had $2 gasoline a few years ago is the price of oil. So if you're an oil producer, you're making a lot of money right now.
According to the California Energy Commission, almost 70% of what you pay at the pump goes to oil producers. But what accounts for the regional differences in price? I mean, we're all paying the same amount for crude, and we're all paying the same amount in federal gas tax. So why don't we pay the same for a gallon of gas in California as they do in Kansas or Montana?
California uses a different sort of gasoline than the rest of the country. It's a different formulation. It's a more expensive formulation to produce. It's also a cleaner burning formulation.
California has the strictest emission control regulations in the country, even stricter than the federal government. And our special gas recipe helps keep pollution down, but it also costs more to produce. On average, it adds 5 to 15 cents to every gallon we buy. Lisa Marganelli is the author of the book Oil on the Brain, Petroleum's Long, Strange Trip to Your Tank.
People say, oh my God, we're spending 10 cents extra a gallon for gasoline, and we're just doing that to keep the air clean. Well, yes, you are, but your house is worth a lot more because you can see the nearby hills.
It wasn't always like that. In the late 1960s and early 1970s, air pollution was so bad in California that
people would go for weeks without seeing the mountains around L.A. When there were movies coming out of Hollywood about kids dying on the way home from school because of the smog, California came up with this idea of changing the formula for the gasoline, changing the way the cars worked. We put in catalytic converters and set off this whole chain reaction of events that basically allowed our population to keep growing, allowed industry to keep growing. This is the bargain that we made.
That bargain gives us cleaner air, but it also means that California is kind of a closed market. Since our gas is an exclusive blend, refineries have to be specially designed in order to make it. And it's a gas that no other state uses.
You can't just get in a truck filled with gasoline from Oregon and drive in here and flood our market with cheaper gasoline, bringing down the price and make a little profit on the side. You can't do that.
So if we're running short on gas in California, we have to pay extra for limited supplies or pay extra to ship in our special formula from the few refineries that make it. The other thing that happens is the gas recipe changes from winter to summer. Air quality tends to get worse as it gets hotter outside. But that summer gas is more expensive to produce. When refineries switch over, it's a complex process, and sometimes things go wrong, which can limit supplies or just make people really anxious about potentially limited supplies. This anxiety means that while the switch is happening, prices go up. That's what's going on right now. Joe has owned gas stations in San Francisco for the last 35 years. Because his business depends on good relationships with oil companies and refiners, he didn't want to use his last name on the air. For him, higher gas prices don't necessarily mean higher profits.
Sometimes we make a few cents, sometimes we lose a few cents. Whether the gas is $1 a gallon or $5 a gallon, our margin is basically the same thing.
That margin is pretty small. Joe averages between 5 and 10 cents profit for each gallon he sells. Most of the money station owners make comes from selling things like bags of Doritos and bottles of water.
You know, most of the cost for the gas are taxes, and just on the gas alone, there's approximately 50 cents in tax. Okay, so if the gas is free, you'll pay 50 cents. Let's put it this way.
Right now in California, we pay an average of 68 cents per gallon of gas in taxes, and more than half goes to the state. Only consumers in New York State pay more, but by less than a penny. On top of the taxes, credit card fees also drive prices up. On the street where Joe has his station, the price for a gallon of regular varies widely from station to station by about 10 or 11 cents. Some of that variation comes from whether or not the gas is generic or brand name, like Shell or Chevron. And some of that variation comes from how affluent the neighborhood is. Again, UC Berkeley's Severin Borenstein.
If property values are high, gas stations don't tend to stay there, or fewer gas stations stay there. And of course, if fewer gas stations stay there, there's less competition. So if the next gas station is right next door, you see much stronger competition than if the next gas station's a mile away. As a result, in places where gas stations are more widely dispersed, you see higher retail margins. Now, these people aren't ripping you off. They have to cover their property costs, and that is part of what they are doing. They do charge what the market will bear.
So that's one reason why, in a city like San Francisco, you can pay anywhere from $4.19 to $4.69 for the same gallon of gas. But we also pay more for gas here simply because we can.
In areas that are more affluent, I think we tend to see people be less aggressive in finding the cheapest gasoline. And as a result, in those areas, you tend to see higher prices and higher retail margins. Again, retailers of gasoline are not generally getting rich off that business. But it is the case that where they can charge a higher price, they will.
California consumers are willing to pay quite a bit for gas.
Author Lisa Marganelli says our willingness to pay more isn't just a reflection of affluence. It's also a reflection of necessity.
Your ability to cut back on gas really depends upon where you are in the economic food chain in the U.S. and in California in particular. If you got a mortgage in 2005, say, and you decided that you really wanted to buy a house and prices were really high, you would have done something called drive till you qualify. You would have driven away from the major city until you got further and further and further away into a place like Fairfield, maybe, where you would qualify for a mortgage because housing prices were low enough and mortgage terms were friendly enough to get you all the way out there. So then you're stuck in this house where you have to commute.
As gas prices rise and housing values go down, consumers are left in an economic vice with very few options for escape.
So you're stuck with your car, you're stuck with your commute, and you hope that you can keep your job. You are stuck. At today's gas prices, the average family in California is, or four-person household is consuming about $436 worth of gasoline a month. It's really high.
That's $125 more than an average family pays in neighboring Nevada. For most of us, gasoline is something we just can't live without. If you don't have access to public transit or you live too far away from your job, you've got to drive. And that means you have to use California's special expensive blend of gasoline. But it's not always the most expensive. You could live in
Lahaina, Maui, Hawaii, where gas is $4.75 a gallon. But I don't care, because I'm in Lahaina, Maui, Hawaii.
In San Francisco, I'm Julie Kane for Cross Currents.
You can read more about gas prices and find all of our transportation coverage online at kalw.org. You can also visit our partners at Transportation Nation. That's transportationnation.org. This is Cross Currents. I'm Ben Trefney. The state of the economy plays a role in how much we pay for gas. It can also affect our health. A report released last year in Alameda County found that the economic crisis has led to people living in moldy houses, suffering increased depression and stress, and foregoing medical care. Tammy Lee led data collection for the study.
That's really an epidemic, and it's a public health epidemic.
Other researchers have also been starting to study how the recession will affect our health in the coming years. Dr. Sanjay Basu is a resident physician and researcher at UCSF. I visited him at San Francisco General Hospital and asked him how he has seen impoverished conditions conspire to bring down one's physical and emotional health.
Well, one of the main things that we see is that people have to choose between paying for maintaining their health and paying for other necessities of daily living, like housing, food. And the major concerns that we have is that as people get increasing stress, have to work more jobs, really descend into poverty, we find that they often have higher blood pressure, that has downstream effects on their kidneys and heart. They end up having to pay more in terms of preventative medications for preventing heart attacks, and often have heart attacks and kidney disease that they have to pay for as well. So the costs rack up. Similarly, as really healthy food tends to be more expensive than cheaper food and junk foods, we see the consequent rise in obesity, particularly among the poor, and diabetes in that context. So the costs tend to rack up because maintaining yourself in a healthy way can be an expensive pursuit at times, and sometimes can be a luxury when you're struggling to make ends meet.
How do physical environments such as blighted buildings, places that have not been maintained, some environments that basically are caused by economic downturns or long-term neglect, how does that affect somebody?
Well, we started to notice this in the 1980s, where there were a lot of studies of asthma among children in public housing units. And it was pretty directly connected to the levels of dust and poor building quality and chemicals in the environment. A famous set of studies in Boston found that really minimally expensive improvements to those public housing buildings dramatically reduced hospitalization rates for kids to the point where it was really not just improving public health, but also saving costs for the city to improve that public housing. And since those studies, we've learned a lot about housing conditions and how they affect tuberculosis and other infectious diseases, as well as how living in a particular community can affect your likelihood of eating healthy food or exercising. If you live in an unsafe area or in an area cut off from a supermarket, what we call food insecurity or food deserts, that can really affect your outcomes in terms of how likely you are to be obese, to control your diabetes, to get exercise on a day-to-day basis. I have a lady in clinic who is really trying to cut down on her weight, but she's had so many, lives in an area with so much violence that it's difficult for her to get out of her house and still feel safe, which is an understandable concern.
That's Dr. Sanjay Basu. He's a physician at UCSF in San Francisco General, and he has been looking at foreclosure as a public health issue. Tell me another story of somebody who can remain nameless, obviously, but who you've seen who's trying to deal with some of these issues.
I have a gentleman who used to be a Vietnam veteran, and he had been struggling with high blood pressure for years. He finally got under control, was doing great, and then experienced a housing foreclosure, was pretty indebted. And during that time, was really unable to pay his co-payments for his high blood pressure medications. It ended up that he had a series of heart attacks and that his diabetes became poorly controlled as a result of his inability to take care of medications. And the last time I saw him was in the hospital here, and he was joking with me in his usual manner of making light of a tough situation. And he told me, you know, I never lost my leg in Vietnam, but I've lost in San Francisco. And finally, he lost his leg to diabetes.
How can you respond as a doctor, somebody who's really receiving this information, seeing this on a human level firsthand? How can you yourself respond to that?
Well, as healthcare providers, I think we sometimes feel like our major job is to sort of catch people in the flood. But I think an important task is to go upstream and try to see if we can prevent illness as well as treating it. We prescribe a lot of drugs, we do a lot of surgeries, and we do a lot of things after people have gotten ill. But the question is, for us, how can we really prevent them from getting sick and keep people healthy in our communities? For us, it looks like we have to work with other people in other domains of the city. That includes the housing domain, where we've tried to create healthier housing units, even through San Francisco's public housing units, and trying to work with vendors and other people in order to create healthier food, better living spaces and urban park space so that people can exercise, and overall community sense so that when bad things happen to our neighbors, there's a safety net there that's a community safety net for the inevitable disasters that happen in life and that are unpredictable.
So Alameda County has a large portion of its budget wrapped up in redevelopment funds, and redevelopment departments have recently been cut completely by the state. So it seems like things there will probably get better from what you're talking about before they get worse. How have you seen improvements being worked toward despite the economic difficulties that are taking place around California?
Well, you know, Oakland is a very inspiring city, and I think it's inspiring for a couple key reasons. One is that there's this post-civil rights movement of people who still have the spirit of what was in the civil rights movement, the idea of bringing community together in order to push for equity. And as much as we do understand that in the context of state and local budget cuts, a lot of people are struggling, there is this community sense in Alameda County, as in San Francisco and elsewhere, that by really pulling together community resources, we can save the safety net, so to speak, and preserve the kind of buffer zones that keep us healthy. I was recently talking about the foreclosure crisis with some colleagues in Greece who are understandably very interested in what the impact of the recession will be on public health among Greeks. And you know, the bottom line is that just as in the United States and in Greece and everywhere else that we find the data, the result is that really the economy does not rebound when you have an unhealthy population, that health is sort of a necessary prerequisite for getting an economic rebound. And what they're finding in Greece is that people have become so unhealthy in the context of recession that it's hard to really maintain a workforce and to really rebound as an overall economy in that setting. I think we can keep ourselves away from that in the United States if we can see ourselves preserving some of that safety net buffer.
Tell me about one of the inspiring opportunities you've found since this foreclosure crisis has hit and how it's affected public health.
You know, one of the problems our homeless patients have had for years is that they're kind of stuck in the middle between welfare systems and lack of welfare systems. As a homeless person in San Francisco, you generally are enrolled in this Care Not Cash program, which is 50-something dollars a month, and then you might be able to enroll for a shelter bed or some housing. In the context of many people being foreclosed on and becoming newly homeless, it's been found that what we knew for years, which is that there's a lot of holes in this program, has come to light as people said, wait a second, if I lose my house, I actually have less of a buffer and less room to regain my footing, get new jobs, get a roof over my head than if I was still housed. And that seems like a perverse circumstance. And so we've been able to work with folks in the departments here and the government and see what we can do about that.
That's Dr. Sanjay Basu. I spoke with him at San Francisco General Hospital, where he's a resident physician. Have you seen the effects of the recession on health? Tell us your story at 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. Listening to Cross Currents from KALW News, I'm Ben Trefney. The recession has also affected budgets. In San Francisco, high school students have not had yellow school buses for years, and elementary school students may be next. We recently aired a story about how this affects families. Here are some responses we heard from you.
Hi, my name is Cecilia Gary. I'm a parent of a student that is currently enrolled in the San Francisco Unified School District. I've been taking my son to school for the past 2 years. At first, it was very difficult for me to get up in the morning and take my son to school across, you know, the city to take him to school for the reason that I didn't want to lose time from work or what have you. But then I started to think, you know, I mean, in this economy nowadays, there's no money, you know, just there's no buses. So I'm going to take my son to school in the morning. Every day until the economy gets better. And other parents, you know, that complain that they don't know what they're going to do and this and that, you know, I have absolutely no sympathy for them because I'm one of those individuals that do not qualify for resources that the city has to offer as far as, you know, government aid or what have you. I've had to do everything on my own without public assistance. But like I said, it's just something that I have to do and unfortunately live with, you know.
Next message.
Hi, my name is Daria Mead. I live in the Excelsior District, and my kids go to school in the Mission, and I just listened to the Cross Current story about the bus passes, and my kids are still little, but my 12-year-old is just starting to ride the bus, and I can't believe I didn't know that kids can't get free bus passes. I grew up in New York City in the 70s and 80s, and, I mean, the city was in dire straits, and kids still, even in private schools, got free bus passes. It's outrageous. I spend so much time and money driving my kids around town, and then you add to it the crazy lottery system where kids get schools halfway across the city. It would drastically reduce traffic and congestion, as well as affecting perhaps the choice of high school where we are now starting the hunt. I am committed to living in the city. I grew up in a city. My husband's from L.A. I'm not a suburban person. But there need to be ways to make living in the city with a family easier and affordable.
End of message.
Thanks for those, and you can share your thoughts, too, on any of our stories. Just call us at 415-264-7106. Again, that's 415-264-7106. We're always experimenting with new ways of telling stories here at Cross Currents, and now we're exploring the new sound of public radio. It's you, and it's KALW's new thing, Hear, Hear.
Hear?
Hear?
Hear.
Okay, together.
Okay. Hear, Hear,
a pop-up radio project.
KALW producers will be popping up all over San Francisco and Oakland to gather your stories of life in these two cities, just 5 miles apart. Your stories will live online and could even be broadcast on Cross Currents. We'll be popping up for the first time at the Golden Gate branch of the Oakland Public Library next Tuesday, April 17th, from 3 to 7 p.m. Find out more at our Facebook page. We're KALW News. You've been listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. The team includes Hannah Baba, Julie Kane, Audrey Dilling, Emily Gaddick, Jordan Katz, Artem Konohovs, Casey Miner, Erica Moo, Rena Palta, Seth Samuel, Stephen Short, and Katie Steyer. Today's show is engineered by Chris Hoff. Martina Castro is our managing editor. Holly Kernan is our news director. Thanks to City CarShare, which provides an alternative transportation option for our reporters. City CarShare is on the web at citycarshare.org, and thanks to you. We are listener-supported radio. The song you're hearing is by the very San Francisco band called Future Twin. The band started as a trio, but is now a five-piece group when they all show up. They have a show planned Saturday at El Rio in San Francisco. They'll probably include songs from their debut EP cassette. Yes, you heard that right, which came out in January. Music starts around 9 p.m. For Cross Currents, I'm Ben Trefney.